This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, April 11th, 2008. Commodity Week is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Corn tagged new contract highs this past week amid support of outside factors and talk about planning delays and friendly U.S. and world-ending stocks estimates. Is a short-term setback in the cards? And will December corn ultimately tag $7? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Our panelists today are Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale in Mahama, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question, Dan Zwicker. Futures prices have been volatile all spring, and given what you know about the market at the moment, where is corn likely headed short term, say over the next 3 weeks? And what do you think is the longer term potential for December futures?
Well, I think short term we're trading the weather market and how quickly the crop goes in the ground, what kind of shape it goes into the ground. So I think we're going to get into more of a choppy trading type pattern situation. You could just kind of tell the way the market performed here late Friday is the fear that the clearer weather was going to allow some planting to take place. You saw a lot of people running to the door there on Friday. So, longer term, I think the market still is going to have to wrestle with a very tight supply-demand balance sheet. Unless we just have perfect weather and an ideal planting from here on out, it's going to be difficult to raise a crop that builds stocks. And I think as long as we're in a very tight stock situation, the corn market, I think it's going to stay nervous and probably won't get comfortable with a big crop or a fairly loose supply situation until we get, down the road into May or June.
Are you $7 bullish?
You could probably read that in the charts, depending upon how you want to read them. But I think you have to mix in an element of fundamentals. There's two things, I think, that could make that happen. Number one, a serious planting delay that would reduce corn plantings underneath the 86 million acre level than what USA came out with here, and a total collapse of the dollar. And I think that's a possibility. When you look at price action in the dollar, it does look like the dollar is teetering with moving down into the mid-60s. And I think something like that would juice up the outside market activities and provide some underlying support to the agricultural commodity sector.
Mike Georgie, lots of producers made corn sales at $4. What can they do at this point to improve their profitability? That's question one for you. And the second question, for those who purchased puts at $5, is it now time to roll those up?
Well, I think, the guys that sold it at $5, I think you still have an opportunity to buy puts or even buy some call spreads, bull call spreads that could help you if you go into $7. And I think buying puts on what you haven't have sold now is buy more, because this is going to be a volatile market. We're getting into the planting season. If the planters get rolling, we can get a heck of a lot planted in a short amount of time.
Mike Zuzolo, it seems that almost everyone is bullish this corn market. So we must ask, what set of factors could turn speculators and funds bearish?
Well, I think Dan hit it, Dave. I think that dollar is probably the number one factor that could cause both sides of the ledger to be explored. If the dollar firmed up, if we had coordinated intervention by the major economies of the world. That would make probably the dollar rebound pretty nicely, at least a retracement, and maybe get it back to 80. And that, I think, would probably cause quite a bit of short covering in the dollar and probably long liquidation by funds. I think the other thing that's starting to be recognized in the bigger picture with some of these most recent updates by IMF and the World Bank, which typically run a little bit lagging with what's really happening in the real market, but the weak dollar policy by the Fed's not really working to stabilize the global economy anymore, and therefore it's not really helping the grain demand anymore. It's actually causing more headaches in terms of riots in Asia over the rice shortages, in terms of the high energy prices. You know, the stock bulls in Asia, the Chinese market's down about 40% from the highs. The Indian market's down about 12%. The price increases for raw materials are starting to be passed on to end users now. In the last couple of years, they haven't been. So this cheap dollar policy is starting to work against us as far as grain demand. So it's a slippery slope we're on right now, and I think more and more people are starting to realize that.
May soybeans had a high on the week of 13.80 and a half, a low of 12.45. May beans finishing the week at 13.32 and a half, up 55 and a half from last week. The noves at 12.62 and a half are up 38 and three quarters from a week ago. Mike Giorgi, this past week USDA raised old crop carry out by 20 million bushels for the beans. And they did that by lowering the residual 77 million bushels, raising the crush by 5 million, and raising exports by 50 million. What do you make of this residual number?
I don't think they know what the residual number is. It's a number out there that, you know, they lowered it by 70 million. I don't know what it all entails, but, you know, by taking away from it, it does make the market look a little bullish.
Is it suggestive that there could be revisions to the 2007-08 soybean crop next January?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that's what it is. They added this residual number several years ago, and I don't know what it means, but I don't think it's going to change the production number.
Mike Zuzulo, despite all the bearish fundamental news, soybeans continue to march higher. And this week they crossed to the upside of a short-term downtrend line, and they tested their 50-day moving averages. Are $13 or better new crop beans now back in play?
Well, I think they should be, Dave, and I think the fundamentals aren't that negative right now. You know, we had the increase in exports by USDA of 50 million and crush by 5, and yeah, that's hindsight, but China just came out with their first quarter imports of soy, and that was up 36%. Versus last year for the first quarter. And, you know, between that and the Argentine strike still pulling beans out of the Gulf in this energy rally that we continue to see, I think maybe the fact of the matter is, and we talked about this right after the numbers came out by USDA, I think Chicago, until they're going to be proven otherwise by USDA, really believes we've seen the biggest new crop bean acreage number of the year, of the springtime, especially if we do start to dry out and get corn planted. So fundamentally, it's not as negative, I think, as some have thought. Maybe it is. Technically, certainly what you're saying is right, and we're going into more of a technical mindset here in the next 60 days, mainly because of emotion, but we think that's the best way that you can judge what and gauge what the speculators are thinking between that and the energy market. So the 1225, 1230 level and Nov beans is real critical to hold here. If it doesn't, then we may be open to testing long-term trend lines, which would be, you know, 75, 80 cents lower. But if we can hold 1225, 1230, and we start to open the planting window up, then, yeah, we're looking for maybe a little bit over $13 to get some hedges in place.
Dan Zwicker, how friendly do you want to be November beans if the U.S. dollar breaks out of its wedge formation and makes those new lows that you were talking about? And crude oil, as some analysts are suggesting, marches toward $115 to $120.
Well, new crop soybeans is supportive in the sense is that our old crop supply is going to be very tight. Now, I know USDA bumped up the carry out, but I think with this recent round of turbulence that we've seen in Argentina with the farmer strike, maybe on again, off again, that has brought a lot of unexpected export demand into the U.S. market, and I think you're going to see that number shrink over time. Exports are going to go up because of that, and I think the USDA, by lowering residual is an admission that they've understated last year's production. So we do have a little larger production. That was the only way they could get more supply into the balance sheet, by reducing residual use, which is nothing more than unexplained disappearance. So that was one way they could get a little more supply, show a little looser type balance sheet. But it is very tight. It is much tighter than 160. So that kind of mutes the larger plantings that kind of showed up on the 31st report. It's pretty much of a weather situation. The bean crop, though, one thing that we got to keep in mind is that it's going to need a very favorable double crop season. And that's going to be a July weather, August pattern, because without a very favorable new crop season, the soybean supplies are going to be very tight and very explosive as you go into the fall.
May corn a high on the week of 616, a low of 583. May corn finishing the week at 584 and a quarter, down 13 and three quarters. December 604, down 4 3/4 from a week ago. Mike Georgie, let's turn our discussion to basis on the corn side. What are your expectations for the next 30 days?
Well, in the next 30 days, they could widen up some, just for the fact that, you know, we think we can get the corn in the ground. It's going to depend on if we can get the corn in the ground. If we can get it in the ground, it's going to probably widen up, but we get more acres. But then if the price takes off higher, it's probably going to widen too. So basis is something you can't fight, but I think it definitely looks like it could stay wide and even get wider.
Dan Zwicker, your basis analysis.
It depends on whether or not the market will allow the hedgers to roll into September. They need to carry in the market. I think if your country elevators can roll their hedges into September, that'll keep inventory off the marketplace, and maybe basis levels have a chance to firm up. But unless we get full carry so they can roll their July hedges on into September, there's going to be a lot of pressure to liquidate their inventories. And that'll put continued pressure on basis. I think the basis situation, again, we don't have a large supply of inventory in corn. So it's tough to get real bearish the basis unless this market would go sharply higher and force hedge liquidation or inventories to move into the inventory because they can't meet margin calls anymore, the country elevators, then that would get into a real wide basis situation. But if the corn market prices would stabilize, I think there would be some stability here on the basis.
May wheat a high on the week of 980.5, a low of 885. May wheat finishing the week at 896.5, down 77 3/4 from a week ago. July 910.5, down 81 from last week. Mike Zuzulo, world fundamentals for wheat are improving. Will speculative money continue to support prices, or are we headed for another leg down with prices potentially targeting the $8 level?
Dave, I think we're probably more technically oriented in the wheat than we are anything else as far as the new crop July wheat, because the potential for another leg down is really shows up on the chart in terms of a bear flag. And if we would cross through that April 1st low of around 903 3/4 on July wheat, that would indicate to us a negative close and the potential for another leg down. Now, having said that, we are coming in and re-owning wheat for our wheat hedgers, because we did not like what we saw as far as next week's maps in terms of potential for precip and what types of temperatures they're going to be looking at. Clients down near Amarillo, Lubbock, Texas, have told me they're already getting crop insurance adjusters out to look at their hard red wheat because it is not irrigated and it's not high enough, and they're really thinking about just tearing it up and taking a claim on it or trying to finish their stocker cattle on it. So I think we're going to try and play it from the long side here with our clients for 08 re-ownership, but if we would go back below 903 3/4, then we'd probably unravel those longs we're putting on right now.
April live cattle had a high on the week of 88.80, a low of 86.45. April live cattle finishing the week at 88.70, up 80. Lean hogs for April, a high of 59.85, a low of 58.45. April lean hogs finishing the week at 58.95, up 42.5 from a week ago. Mike Georgie, do you see any upside technical potential on the horizon for December hog futures?
that's kind of a toss-up because I think the numbers are good for the hogs. I don't think the last hog and pig report showed as much decline in the breeding herd as people had anticipated. So I think going into 08 on any month, if you can get it hedged, it's probably overpriced a little bit, and you do need to get your hedges on.
Thank you to the more than 1,000 of you who pledged more than $181,000 to WILO Radio during our just-ended spring fundraiser. We'd like to welcome 105 new members to the Friends of WILO. Thanks for helping make a real difference. And if for some reason you didn't get a chance to make a contribution, you can make one anytime at willpledge.org. Again, many thanks.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Well, the story this week is a familiar one, just too much rainfall. Before we talk about this week, though, let's review March. The statewide precipitation in March was 4.48 inches, 1.27 inches above normal, while northern Illinois had less than 2 inches of precipitation with a lot of snow. Most of Illinois south of I-70 received at least 6 inches of rain, with several sites reporting more than 10 inches. As you can imagine, by the end of March, soils were essentially saturated around the state. Since the beginning of April, we received an additional 2 to 3 inches in northern Illinois and 3 to 6 inches in southern Illinois. With saturated soils, nearly all of this rain is runoff, causing flooding of streams, rivers, and lakes at times around the state. Not only are the soils saturated, but they're cool as well. Soil temperatures currently range from the low 40s in northern Illinois, upper 40s in central Illinois, and low 50s in southern Illinois. Since April 1, daily highs have been running about 2 to 4 degrees below normal because of the cloudy, rainy weather, while daily lows have been near normal. The National Weather Service forecast calls for a break from the cold, wet weather by this Sunday, with gradual warming through the next week. Temperatures are expected to reach into the 60s by Tuesday. Right now, it looks like the next system may move through by Friday or Saturday. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Mike Zuzolo, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Georgie. Joining us today by phone is Drew Lerner, senior meteorologist for World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and our regular meteorologist during the closing market report on Wednesday afternoons. Thanks for being with us today, Drew.
Thank you for inviting me.
Before we get to what I imagine will be a number of questions about planting windows, would you share with us how it is that we've been caught in a wetter-than-normal trend for the past several months?
Well, we most definitely have been in a wetter-than-usual pattern, and it's all due to La Nina. La Nina has contributed an enormous influence on global weather patterns, and it's very typical for us to encounter wet weather in the eastern part of the Midwest and the Delta during situations like this. What's interesting, though, believe it or not, and don't tell Al Gore this, but the atmosphere has actually cooled quite a bit globally over the past 12 to 18 months, and that has contributed to the wet weather bias, believe it or not, by chilling down the atmosphere quite a bit and causing air mass contrast and air mass temperatures to be greater, so that when we get rain events to occur, they are far more intensive than they have been in the past. And that's the reason why we've been so excessively wet here recently.
Questions for Drew. Mike Zuzolo.
Drew, in terms of producers right now, it doesn't matter whether I talk to people in Iowa or in Ohio, they're all pretty worried that a wet, cold spring is going to be followed by a hot, dry summer. And, you know, I'm in the mindset that maybe we won't see as much corn get sold in terms of old crop corn until later this spring just because of that fear by producers. Do you have anything that you can tell us about the past that would allude to whether that's a just a common fear, whether there's some truth to that?
Well, there's quite a bit of truth to it. A lot of times when we are at a precipitation extreme for an extended period of time, Mother Nature tends to swing that pendulum the other way. 1983 is certainly a good example of that. In 1983, the entire Midwest was just inundated with rain during the month of April, and things just totally turned around when we went into the heart of summer. By July, a big part of the Midwest was quite dry, and August and September were critically dry, and of course the crops suffered big time. The biggest difference, though, between 83 and what's happening right now is that in 1983, the atmosphere was in a very warm mode, and we were already in somewhat of a dry biased pattern. Now, the Midwest is the exception. There has actually been below average precipitation in large portions of the country at times over the past couple of years. Of course, last summer was a bit of stress for the heart of the Midwest. But in answer to your question, there is evidence that we could indeed warm up a little bit this summer. Part of that would be due to La Nina. La Nina tends to contribute a little bit of a warm bias to the North American summer seasons. Also, the sunspot cycle is giving us assurance that the Midwest will have a drier bias during the summer season. That is not a 100% occurrence. Every time we're at a sunspot minimum, we don't always have below average precipitation in the Midwest, but it comes out to be about 4 out of 5 times. So it does favor that kind of a scenario. As far as one of the comments about the temperature potential here is that with this global cooling pattern occurring right now, there is potential that we might cool down just a little bit this summer. Some of the computer forecast models are actually predicting a cool summer for the Midwest. I'm not necessarily buying into that at the moment. I think we'll have our few weeks that will be quite warm and stressful across portions of the Midwest. Right now, I'm focused on the Western Corn Belt and the plains for the biggest problem with dryness later in the summer.
Dan Zwicker?
Let's bring her back a little shorter term here. I know the weather models, or at least short term here, indicate there's a drier window here opening up here next week. I look at the La Nina weather site, and I see that they've kind of downgraded La Nina now to more something more moderate than where it was stronger here earlier in the year. How's that going to impact here? If you can, give us an idea maybe over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, I think probably La Nina's contribution over the next 2 or 3 weeks isn't going to be a whole lot different than what it has been. Now, with that said, I don't want everyone to say, well, that means it's going to rain all the time. And, well, that's not really true. La Nina tends to be wet through the late winter, and when we go into spring, things change a bit. We start losing some precipitation. Also, you have to keep in mind that at this time of the year, the jet stream begins lifting to the north. Because of seasonal warming that does take place, and so that should shift the wet weather bias a little bit further to the north as time moves on. And lastly, we have a pattern that's being biased by something we call the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is has to do with sea surface temperatures across the northern Pacific Ocean. Right now we're in a negative phase of that PDO, and what that does is it tends to bring storms into the western United States and creates a southwest flow pattern. So what's going to happen, I think, over the next 2 or 3 weeks is that we're going to see a shift in weather patterns so that the wettest areas in the Midwest will shift to the northwest. The northwestern Corn Belt, portions of the eastern northern plains, and perhaps a portion of the Great Lakes region will start seeing above-average precipitation. Probably not so much in this next week to 10 days, as much as it'll be in the last week of April and on into the first half of May. The lower parts of the Midwest will probably see better weather, but the upper portions may have a deterioration.
Mike Georgie?
When you're talking lower Midwest, I'd say southern Illinois, Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri has really got a deluge of rain here the last couple days and weeks. Are they going to dry out here?
I think they will dry down, yes. It's not going to be as quick as some of these near-term models have tried to imply here in the last 24 hours or so. But, yes, we're through with all the excessive rains, and we are going to induce seasonal warming in the lower parts of the Midwest and the Delta. That will allow us to get better evaporation between storm systems. But I don't think we want to just assume that, by the end of next week we're going to be able to work some of those fields. Some of those areas have had anywhere from 10 to 17 inches of rainfall in the last 30 days. There's a lot of water standing on the fields, and it's going to take at least a week for the flooding to go away, and then we're then we'll start worrying about trying to firm the soil up. So, of course, that's in the worst-case scenario fields out there, but I think in general the whole of the region you just described has at least a week to 10 days of necessary drying before we can really get aggressive about any kind of field work in those areas. And by then, the weather pattern will shift again, and we'll start seeing more timely showers occurring across the region. So an aggressive approach to planting here over the next few weeks, I think, is going to be a little bit more of a tough reach in those southern areas. The rest of the Midwest will probably do a little bit better until that wet weather bias starts in the north.
Mike Zuzulo.
Drew, what do you look at the in terms for the next week or so? What are you looking at in the southern plains, especially those driest areas of Texas and western Kansas, western Oklahoma, and eastern Colorado?
Yeah, the problem now is going to be the ridge of high pressure that's going to be building up as we go through this coming week, and that ridge is going to be rather impressive for a short period of time, and it will generate 80-degree temperatures throughout a big part of that region and probably some 90s as well. We did get a little bit of rain in some of that dry region this week, but it'll be lost to evaporation within probably the next 2 or 3 days. And the stage is set for a pretty strong surge of hot temperatures. So, like I said, 80s and 90s will occur certainly in West Texas, and we'll probably see those 80s reaching up, actually all the way up into Nebraska potentially. And that will definitely accelerate drying rates and bring back the stress levels in the Southwest Plains to a pretty high level. I do not expect to see a lot of precipitation coming up after we get through this week. However, the instability in the atmosphere will be building up, and we will also be shifting the jet stream into a southwest low pattern. That is likely to drag a few cool fronts into the hard red wheat country, and it will set off some thunderstorms of strong intensity. The key is going to be where that dry line is and whether or not we can get the rains to fall far enough to the west. Right now, I would say that most of these disturbances will probably miss southeastern Colorado and the westernmost parts of the Texas Panhandle. But as you get off into the eastern portion of the Panhandle and into the interior of southwest Kansas and western Oklahoma, I think we'll start seeing a little more timely shower and thunderstorm activity. So the crop deterioration issue will probably be most severe in the far southwestern part of the region, and other areas will probably do relatively well.
Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Drew Lerner, Senior Meteorologist for World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And now, a chance for a final word from our panelists, Mike Zuzulo.
Well, this is the time of year for the row crops. It's kind of hard to buy bullish news if you're seeing planting, Dave. So between the emotion of this year and also how much more busy the farmers are going to be in the fields because they're curtailed now and constrained with these plantings, we're going to really watch those technicals and respect those and take them at face value.
Dan Zwicker?
I would just say that don't get in too big a hurry. Be careful and be safe.
And Mike Georgie?
I'd say that's right. Keep your eye on the roll, and let's get her done.
We would like to thank our panel, Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Mike Georgie of Allendale in Mahama, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.